executive producer Isaac Saul, this is Tangle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Tangle Podcast, the place we get views from across the political spectrum, some independent thinking without all that hysterical nonsense you find everywhere else. I'm your host, Isaac Saul, and on today's episode, we are going to be talking about the death of Tyre Nichols and the police body camera and dash cam and a security camera footage that were released on Friday. Before we jump in, though, as always, we'll start off with some quick hits. First up, the Republican National Committee re-elected Ronna McDaniel to her fourth term as chairwoman of the Republican Party. Number two, nine Palestinians were killed during a raid by the Israeli military in the West Bank. Israel says it was conducting an anti-terrorism operation. Palestinian authorities have suspended security coordination with Israel. Number three, Representative Adam Schiff said he will run for Senate in California's 2024 race, joining Representatives Katie Porter and Barbara Lee, who are also running. Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is 89 years old, still hasn't announced her plans to retire from the seat. Number four, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he will meet with President Joe Biden to discuss the debt ceiling on Wednesday. Number five, former President Trump campaigned in New Hampshire and South Carolina this weekend, officially kicking off his 2024 presidential campaign.
Hi everyone, I'm Ray Vieta. We're going to start with a disturbing body camera of the deadly beating of Tyre Nichols in Memphis. It was just released in the last hour.
Begin this morning, though, with the latest in the investigation into Tyre Nichols' death.
That's right. Much of the country is in grief, pain, and feeling anger over the release of that graphic video footage depicting the brutal police assault of Nichols earlier this month.
Let's get to our top story out of Memphis. It's expected to be another difficult, emotional week. The city is struggling after the release of videos showing officers beating Tyre Nichols in early January.
Before we jump into today's episode, I want to give a brief warning that today's edition of Tangle includes descriptions of violence, explicit language, and we also have links to graphic videos of the beating of Tyre Nichols that will be in today's episode description. On January 7th, the 29-year-old was pulled over on allegations of reckless driving. The Memphis Police Department released four edited videos capturing the encounter, but details of the cause for the initial traffic stop remain unclear. At the very start of the one video of the initial traffic stop, released by the Memphis Police Department, officers are already approaching Nichols' car, screaming with their guns drawn as they drag him out of his car. Several officers are threatening to shoot or hurt Nichols as they approach the car, with one officer screaming, "You are going to get your ass blown the fuck up." One officer opens his door and pulls Nichols to the ground. Nichols initially remains calm, saying to the officers, "Damn, I didn't do anything," as they tell him to get on the ground. He complies, lying on his side, as he continues to tell the cops, "I'm on the ground, okay?" Nichols again says to the officers he didn't do anything and says that he is just trying to get home, as one officer commands another to tase him twice. Laying on his side, surrounded by the officers, the police struggle to get both of his hands behind his back as they hold down parts of his body and repeatedly threaten to tase and pepper spray him. "I'm going to knock your ass the fuck out," one officer says, and Nichols again responds, "You are really doing a lot right now." The officers tell him to get on his stomach, and Nichols, lying on his side with one arm behind his back, says, "I am, please." And an officer says, "Spray him," and one of the cops pepper sprays Nichols. The spray hits Nichols and at least one other officer, which sets off a commotion that obstructs the body camera for about 2 seconds. Then Nichols can be seen struggling to his feet as an officer deploys his taser, at which point Nichols wriggles from the officer's grasp, removes his sweatshirt, and flees on foot. Approximately 8 minutes later, body camera footage and a security camera from a light pole on the street capture officers as they encounter Nichols in a suburban neighborhood about 100 yards from his home. The officers surround Nichols and begin kicking, punching, and beating him with a baton. Officers continue to strike him in the head, stomach, and back while he is on the ground. At one point, the officers pick him up and hold him on his feet with his hands restrained to allow the other officers to continue beating him. In the footage of the second encounter, Nichols does not strike any of the officers. For much of the video, his hands are restrained behind him. He repeatedly pleads with the officers to stop, even screaming for his mother at several points in the videos. Nichols was unarmed, and police have yet to share dash camera footage or traffic footage to substantiate the allegations of reckless driving. There were no reported weapons, drugs, or contraband found in his vehicle. Memphis Police Chief C.J. Davis said authorities don't have video of the initial traffic stop because the first officer on the scene was driving a brand new unmarked car that was not equipped with dashboard cameras. Davis says she doesn't yet know why the officer was in an unmarked car, often used for surveillance, or how the initial encounter unfolded. She said the officers alleged Nichols was driving on the wrong side of the road, but we have not been able to prove that. At the end of the beating, the officers leave Nichols propped up against the side of a patrol car for nearly 20 minutes. Nobody on scene administers any first aid. Medics arrive but mill around with the officers for several minutes before they begin to tend to him. About 30 minutes after the beating began, an ambulance arrives and he is taken to the hospital. 3 days later, Nichols died from extensive internal bleeding due to injuries consistent with a severe beating. According to his family and their attorney, Nichols had been working in the second shift at a nearby FedEx facility for about 9 months. He had a 4-year-old son, was an avid photographer and skateboarder, and was reportedly returning from a nearby park when he was pulled over by police. The 5 officers visible in the video of the second encounter were Tadarius Bean, Demetrius Haley, Emmett Martin III, Desmond Mills Jr., and Justin Smith. They were part of a special unit called Scorpion, Street Crimes Operation to Restore Peace in Our Neighborhoods, that was formed to address some of the most serious crimes in Memphis, like homicides, robberies, and assaults. All 5 officers are Black, and each one has been fired and charged with second-degree murder, aggravated assault, aggravated kidnapping, official misconduct, and official oppression. A 6th officer, whose body camera footage was released by the Memphis Police Department, has yet to be officially identified. He appeared to be a white officer who deployed his taser against Nichols. 2 fire department employees who arrived to administer emergency medical services have also been put on leave. The Memphis Police Department says it is permanently disbanding the Scorpion unit. The Memphis Police Department released 4 videos related to the apprehension and beating of Nichols. Again, a warning that it is very graphic content. Today, we'll be taking a look at some reactions to the encounter, the video, and the protests, and then my take. First up, we'll start with what the left is saying. The left condemns the beatings, and many argue it is another example of a rotten police culture that promotes excessive force. Some say America, scared of rising crime, has moved on from police reform. Others say the few popular reforms implemented so far clearly aren't working and insist we need to reimagine the entire policing system. In the New York Times, Charles Blow condemned America's shame of abandoning broader police reforms. After the killing of George Floyd in 2020 and the historic number of protests that followed, police killings of American citizens didn't decrease, they increased, Blow said. What fell away were the evanescent allies, poll-chasing politicians and cooped-up COVID kids who had used the protests as an opportunity to congregate. Even Black people's support for the Black Lives Matter movement eventually began to fall. And as Americans shifted to other priorities like politics and the economy, the broader public became desensitized to police killings, or callously started to see the police killings as unfortunate but ultimately acceptable byproducts of much-needed increased policing at a time of rising crime. Too many liberal politicians showed us that their commitment to legislation and even language to protect Black lives from police violence was polling dependent, not rooted in moral rectitude or core values, but governed by their ideas' public appeal. When the wind shifted, these politicians spun like a weather vane, he said. They ran scared of being labeled woke or supporting a defund the police ideology. Rather than rebrand a laudable effort to be smarter about how municipal funds are allocated with a more acceptable slogan, they did the lazy, politically expedient thing. They raced to neutralize the idea by proclaiming their direct opposition to it, not defunding the police, but increasing funding to the police, he said. Police unions also learned a lesson, that they could survive the most intense and coordinated denunciation of their practices they had ever faced and still dodge federal legislation to address the violence that happens on their watch. Former Representative Val Demings, the Democrat from Florida who was police chief in Orlando for 4 years, said that police must reform themselves. Unfortunately, it's unlikely any serious reforms will come from Congress. In 2020, the House Democrats passed the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, a bill that was not perfect, but at least made a real start, Deming said. Senate Republicans blocked it, however, hiding behind blatant lies about defunding the police and claiming the legislation went after good officers just doing their jobs. In fact, House Democrats also passed legislation to increase, not decrease, police funding, including one of my bills. President Biden signed an executive order for federal law enforcement that put into place some of those ideas, but we still need reforms for local departments. Police departments should take the lead to revise and reform use of force policies, hiring and training standards, and oversight and accountability, she wrote. Techniques such as chokeholds need to be banned, and practices such as no-knock warrants should be tightly controlled. Officers on special units need to be highly seasoned, fully accountable, and regularly rotated. Transparency and accountability should be seen for what they are, tools to allow executives to strengthen departments. There is currently no national database of police misconduct, meaning that when officers are fired for cause, they could be hired by another department elsewhere. Law enforcement executives have a duty to ensure that misconduct is never tolerated. In The New Yorker, Zach Cheney Rice wrote about the limited nature of popular police reforms and the necessity of tearing down the current policing model. The crisis in Memphis is the latest lesson in how limited the most popular reforms are, including those that might have seemed like game changers not so long ago. Body cameras may have given us visual evidence of Nichols' deathly beating, but were no deterrent, Cheney Rice said. Severely curtailing the power of cops and dismantling America's policing infrastructure have been dismissed as political poison and ruinous to public safety. But the alternative is a system where inevitable atrocities arise instead, forcing grieving moms and rattled officials to beg people not to burn down their cities. The fact that all five cops who killed Nichols are Black is further evidence that we're not dealing with a problem of individual prejudice and unaccountability, but something more fundamental to the job of policing. In reality, Black Memphians are still trapped in a web of segregation, suspicion, and the second highest poverty rate of any city in America with more than 500,000 residents, disadvantages that are overseen and patrolled most directly by the police. Tyre Nichols was not killed by a bad apple or a bigoted white interloper with a badge, but by a group of five cops united in a common sense of purpose and a legal mandate to determine who lives or dies, he wrote. Nichols' death may lead to new calls for police reform, but reform can only go so far if the police are operating as intended. All right, that is it for what the left is saying, which brings us to what the right is saying. Many on the right also condemn the beatings and insist that police are being held responsible. Some note the race of the officers and argue that this undermines a popular liberal narrative of the role race plays in these encounters. Others say the officers should be punished, but warn about another wave of calls to defund the police. The Wall Street Journal editorial board said the police who beat the young man are being held accountable. Americans owe a debt of gratitude to the family of Tyre Nichols, the 29-year-old father who was beaten during an arrest by Memphis police and died 3 days later. The Nichols family called for protesters to avoid violence as they demanded justice in the case, and for the most part, that is what happened over the weekend after the police video of the arrest was released Friday evening, the board said. The body cam video is infuriating and will be part of the evidence against the five officers charged with second-degree murder, among other offenses. Nichols appears to be defenseless as he was repeatedly kicked and hit. The officers were dismissed from the force, and the district attorney brought the charges before the video was publicly released. Whatever justice is meted out won't make up for the loss of an apparently innocent young man's life, but the cops are being held accountable. The case will bring back the issue of police training and how extensive such abuse is. The officers were part of a special unit called Scorpion, formed in 2021 to reduce violence in high-crime areas of a city notorious for the lack of public safety. The police disbanded the Scorpion unit this weekend, which is no doubt a response to public anger, but it won't serve the city if this leads to a new burst of crime, the board wrote. The fact that there is inadequate training and poor recruitment for police in many parts of the country is undeniable. The answer must come primarily from local and state officials, as policing is rightly a local function. The federal government can help with funding and the distribution of best practices, but not with politically motivated mandates. In National Review, Rich Lowry said if the cops were white, everything would have been different. Cities around the country would experience serious violence and people would get hurt and perhaps killed. Major institutions around the country would find ways to signal their assent to the proposition that America is fundamentally racist. DEI efforts would get another boost in funding and mainstream appeal. The players in the NFL title game would insist on making some statement before playing on Sunday, and on, he wrote. Although there are attempts to save the police racism narrative in Memphis, it simply doesn't have the same resonance in a case involving cops, all of whom are black, mistreating a black arrestee. Indeed, Memphis should be yet another blow to the simplistic, dishonest idea that it is racial animus that accounts for white police misconduct. If you, for good reason, are unwilling to believe the black cops in this case are self-loathing black men who hate young black men and wish to harm them for racial reasons, then their behavior becomes a function of poor training and supervision, abysmal decision-making, anger in the moment, enjoyment of their feeling of power, free-floating cruelty, or some combination of these things, or all of them, Lowry said. These are obviously attributes that influence the conduct of white cops, too. They are all cops, and more important, all human beings who are prone to errors of all kinds. The left has elevated race above all the other factors that might play into a police encounter gone horribly wrong. The racial interpretation allows the left to make a broader critique of American society and force wide-ranging political and social changes. The New York Post editorial board condemned the beatings but warned against generalizing all cops. Anyone who watched the video of Memphis cops fatally beating 29-year-old Tyree Nichols had to be horrified at the senseless brutality of officers sworn to uphold the law, they said. Decent folks should be outraged, the cops held accountable. Yet it would only compound the horror to smear all police officers for the sins of these few, or to inflame the outrage by citing this as an example of systemic racism and a justification for violence, as in 2020 after George Floyd's death. Key questions remain. Why was Nichols really pulled over? What prompted the cops' virulent hostility? Yet so far, there is no evidence whatsoever that the cops targeted Nichols because he was black. Where's the logic in claiming racism after all, considering the officers who delivered the blows, punches, kicks, whacks with a baton were all black themselves? These cops were out of control, abusing their power, incompetent, poorly trained, or all of the above. But racist, they asked? This tragedy will goose the anti-cop defund the police movement, leading to less policing and more crime, which takes the greatest toll on minorities. A Heritage study last year found blacks were 54% of murder victims nationwide, yet just 13% of the population. George Floyd proved it. Following the riots, cities, including New York, cut police resources and violent crime soared. Why repeat that mistake? All right, that is it for the left and the right are saying, which brings us to my take. So we have covered enough of these stories that I want to try to avoid repeating myself today. If you're relatively new, you can know this. I am very critical of our current policing system. I don't necessarily think defunding or fewer cops is the right answer. There are obviously ways in which giving police more money for things like training could actually have benefit. But I do think our police are poorly trained, excessively violent, and have, for a long time, not been held accountable for bad actions. Race has obviously played a big role in many departments' historic mistreatment of citizens. We have plenty of journalism and reporting to bear that out. And despite knowing and loving some police officers as friends and family, I'm inherently skeptical of most police I encounter. And this video certainly did not help. If you're interested in fact-checking our reporting or descriptions of the event, there are links to watch the video in the episode description, but otherwise, I really would recommend against it. The entire episode is upsetting, haunting, disturbing. I'm not sure how much value there is in seeing the video and seeing the actual crime. Nichols maintains an unbelievable level of calm early on as officers threaten to break his arm, to blow his head off, and to tase him. We still have no idea what provoked such a violent and aggressive posture, and Memphis police aren't explaining, which often means it would look worse for the cops than whatever we're imagining. Even the known allegation against Nichols we do have, reckless driving, which has yet to be substantiated, isn't remotely close to a justification for their response, which looked more akin to how cops should act in a hostage situation or if a gang of armed criminals were firing on them. Arguments about the role of institutional racism or the absence of it are all well and good to have. I think that debate in the public discourse is necessary, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that these five black cops were or weren't acting on some internalized racial bias or negative attitudes towards other black folks. I simply don't know one way or the other. I'm convinced the much deeper issue here is, once again, the way that we think of policing itself and how we train our officers to engage citizens in their job. When you arm a quote-unquote special group of young men to the teeth, call them the Scorpion Task Force, hand them unmarked cars without dashboard cameras, and give them free rein to go quote-unquote police a violent and dangerous city as they see fit, guess what? They're going to sometimes act like a violent gang themselves because that's the mentality you've put them in. Twice in my life, I've seen someone get jumped by a group of people trying to seriously harm them, and this video was worse than either of those memories. The beating of Nichols was not an arrest. They weren't trying to restrain or apprehend him or deliver justice. They were administering payback because, according to them, he didn't comply, which, of course, he actually did, at least as well as you can expect anyone to in his situation. He got out of the car, he was put on the ground, he stayed calm, he told officers to relax, and they responded by telling him that they were going to blow his head off, trying to break his arm, pepper spraying him and each other, tasing him, and then beating him to death, all on camera. Part of our broken policing is this reality. It's really, really hard, maybe impossible, to relax your body and comply exactly as you are instructed when you encounter a rabidly aggressive police officer who is twisting your arm or five people who are pointing guns at you and threaten to blow your brains out. I know that might sound crazy, but it's actually true. Why does this happen so often in our country? There are all sorts of popular responses and plenty of factors at play. But if you want my answer, put our abysmal police training at the top of the list. When I interviewed former cop Randy Shrewsbury about how to fix policing, he painstakingly convinced me that nothing mattered more than the way in which officers are trained, a process that usually takes a mere 6 to 8 months and teaches them to view everyone they encounter only as a potential threat. According to Shrewsbury's analysis, only 3 countries require less police training than the United States: Iraq, Afghanistan, and Papua New Guinea. In Australia and New Zealand, cops will be trained for 4 years. In Germany, 3. Here, less than a year. Shrewsbury memorably tells a story of being on a date with a woman who has a hairstylist and realizing her training to keep her cosmetology license was more vigorous than his to be a cop. I'm not here to tell you that all cops are bad, corrupt, criminal, incompetent, violent, or looking for trouble. I don't believe that. I've encountered a lot of cops who are helpful and calm and kind and good at their jobs. I also understand the dangers of policing are real and complex. It is the 22nd most dangerous job in America by one estimate. But to steal a line from Shrewsbury, cops are 3 to 5 times more likely to kill themselves than to be killed by someone else, though most get no training on self-care, identification of PTSD or depression, and if they do, it's generally not more than a day. Again, we ask them to do a difficult job well, and we do a very bad job at preparing them for that job. None of this is any consolation or comfort for Nichols' family. Nobody deserves to die, especially not at the hands of police, and doubly so when they are, by all accounts, a kind, law-abiding father who handled himself with far more composure than any of the police who tried to take him into custody. Of course, more details about the initial encounter may emerge to complicate the narrative we have now, but I sincerely doubt they will change the fundamentals of an incompetent, violent group of officers acting in a criminal fashion. So, yes, we can hope that these cops are punished accordingly, but we should continue to call for changes that have a far more focused and lasting impact. All right, that is it for my take. We're skipping today's reader question because our main story took up some extra space. But as always, if you want to ask a question, you can write to me, Isaac, I-S-A-A-C, at readtangle.com. Next up is our Under the Radar story for today. An online system introduced by the Biden administration to help process asylum claims is being quickly overwhelmed by applicants on a daily basis. CBP One is a mobile app that was launched on January 12th, but so far many applicants find themselves unable to log in, staring at error messages and incapable of scheduling an appointment. Others have complained that applications only exist in Spanish or English, 2 languages many potential applicants don't speak. The Biden administration has pitched CBP One as a safe, orderly alternative to coming into the U.S. illegally and has acknowledged some technical problems. The Associated Press has a story, and there's a link to it in today's episode description. Next up is our numbers section. The number of people who were shot and killed by police in 2022, according to the Washington Post tracker, was 1,096. The number of people who were shot and killed by police in 2021, according to the tracker, was 1,048. The number of fatal police shootings since 2015, according to the Washington Post tracker, is 8,166. The number of people killed by police since 2015 who were white, according to the Washington Post tracker, was 3,622. The number of people killed by police since 2015 who were black was 1,905. The number of black people per million who are shot and killed by police per year is 5.9. The number of white people per million who are shot and killed by police each year is 2.3. All right, and last but not least, our Have a Nice Day story for today. A team of New Jersey police officers went above and beyond to rescue a man who was stranded in the woods and nearly died of hypothermia. Tom McHugh had been reported missing by his daughter 24 hours after she had seen him leave for a ride in the rural Sussex County mountains in his side-by-side off-road vehicle. Troopers later found his crashed side-by-side, and New Jersey State Trooper James Thonis, an ex-Marine, helped track McHugh's boot prints a mile and a half until they discovered him unconscious and suffering from hypothermia. Thonis said he remembered his Marine training on how to warm up a body without fire or blankets. That's what they teach us to do, life-saving skills in cold conditions, he said. Strip down, get on top of him, give him sternum rubs, body heat to body heat, whatever you can do to keep him warm. Officers rotated laying on McHugh to raise his body temperature before carrying him back to their vehicles and rushing him to the hospital. He's now making a full recovery. Good News Network has the story, and there's a link to it in today's episode description. All right, everybody, that is it for today's podcast. As always, if you want to support this work, please go to retangle.com and become a member. You can subscribe to Tangle for just $50 a year or $5 a month, and you can drop something in our tip jar anytime you want to say thank you. You can also give this podcast a 5-star rating or spread the word by sharing it with friends. We'll be right back here, same time tomorrow. Have a good one. Peace. Our podcast is written by me, Isaac Saul, and edited by Zosha Warpaya. Our script is edited by Sean Brady, Ari Weitzman, and Bailey Saul. Shout out to our interns, Audrey Moorhead and Watkins Kelly, and our social media manager, Magdalena Bukova, who created our podcast logo. Music for the podcast was produced by Diet75. For more from Tangle, check out our website at www.retangle.com.